I hope you had a good lunch. We're going to start with deploying Windows 10 mobile phone and devices in a secure enterprise. Yesterday we also had a session. We changed the sessions around. That's why I showed you the earlier slide, because this deck of yesterday was more an overview and the end user experience for an enterprise managed device. This is more how the back end should be configured and what you need to consider when you are going to manage Windows 10 mobile in a secure enterprise environment. My name is Roel Schellens. I'm an architect in the worldwide Windows and Devices Center of Excellence. We are very much aligned with the Windows and Devices Engineering Product Group. We work on a program for them called First Wave, and that's also why I'm presenting this content, because I've been working with a lot of customers all around the world to implement Windows 10, but also Windows 10 Mobile in a very early stage. I'll talk about that more in a second. So this version of Windows 10 and Windows 10 Mobile has a focus on three separate personas that we are trying to target. So first of all, we have, of course, the personal device, which is very much a bring-your-own-device type of scenario. So in a bring-your-own-device type of scenario, you know what happens. A user buys a device. It's their own device. They join it to your environment and can do corporate stuff on it, like email or access your SharePoint server, whatever you allow. A concern of IT is, of course, security. A concern of the end user is, okay, I'm now enrolled in this corporate environment. Am I going to be monitored what I'm doing on this device? It's my personal device. Is that legal? So there are a lot of concerns around this topic. This is also something where Microsoft will invest a lot in going forward, so you will see a lot of changes there. What we're really going to talk about in this presentation is corporate devices. So devices that are owned by the organization and devices that have identities enrolled on those devices that are owned by the organization. The identity is a key component here because, as you know, with a lot of other devices, also Windows Phone 8.1, the core identity that you enroll the device on is an MSA account or public account. So it could be a Live account or Hotmail account. But the problem there is, of course, legal as well, because you're going to enroll a corporate a device that is owned by the organization, and you're actually asking the user to enroll that with a personal identity. In some countries, that we had a lot of issues with that from a legal perspective. So this is now solved in Windows 10 Mobile, and I'll talk about that later. This is the scenario we're going to talk about. Windows 10 Mobile is also used for a lot of point-of-sale devices, devices that are used, handheld devices in all kind of industry scenarios. That's not what we're going to talk about either, but that's something that Windows 10 Mobile is targeting as well, also in this release. So I already spoke about the session of yesterday. So yesterday was really about the end-user experience. So we saw the universal experience that you get about around all the devices that Microsoft is delivering Windows 10 for. If it is a HoloLens, if it is a phone, or is it a point-of-sale device, if it's a desktop or a laptop or a hybrid, the experience for the end user should be identical. We had a demo and we talked about Continuum. We spoke about all the different components where the investment is for enterprises. So we spoke about Azure AD Join. We're going to go in that a little bit deeper today. We spoke about what Passport brings to the device. Enterprise data protection, we had it planned for TH2, but basically 5 minutes before 12, we decided, based on all the feedback we got from TAP customers, that it's not there yet where it should be to release it in production. So we're still working on it. If you're in the Insiders program, you will see it appear again in the next few builds that are published there. The management tools already have it in them, so SCCMV Next, Intune, If you open the console, you will see it appear there as well. So you could then already start testing and working with EDP on those platforms. And we, of course, have many new configuration policies, what we will touch on, and the Windows Store for Business is also a very important thing that customers have been asking since the Windows 8.1 timeframe, because that's where we only could offer a store based on a public identity. Now we can do it based on an identity owned by the organization. In this case, it's the Azure AD identity. So I already spoke about the programs I work in. So I also run the early deployment program for Windows Phone 8. That started 2 years ago. So we did a lot of customers there. We haven't done a lot of PR around it, but we help many large customers all over the world deploying Windows Phone 8.1. So a lot of lessons learned there that we took over into Windows 10 from an engineering perspective. The Windows 10 technical adoption program is now also ramping down, so you might have heard about it. This was TH1 and TH2. So is everyone familiar with those names, TH1, TH2? If you're in the insider program, you know it, but that's the code name that we used until the product was released. So what was released, I believe, last week is TH2. That's now out there, so we finished engineering on it. We're now moving to the next milestone. So these programs we're ramping down on them. Then there was First Wave. First Wave is really taking things one step further. So that's where we work with customers. So when the product is released, in a very short time frame to deploy Windows 10 Mobile in a very business-like scenario. So if you go to a lot of these events and you've seen very cool videos about Windows 10, it's very likely, or a lot of those videos come from our program. So what we do as architects in the First Wave team, we go to customers, identify those scenarios. It needs to be a business scenario, like I said, where we can make a really nice video around. Customer is willing to do PR at the end. We are willing to invest in that customer to unblock them to do things faster or bigger or better. So that's the whole idea about our program. It's a corporate-led program, so I'm a global resource, so I have customers all over the world, and yeah, it's a great thing to work on because you're very early engaged in new technologies. So what are the readiness topics you need to consider when you start deploying Windows 10 Mobile? Or Windows 10 in a mobile scenario, because they are managed in a very identical way. If you have one, you have the other as well from an infrastructure and supportability perspective. So you don't have to do things twice. It's one investment, and you have everything ready. So first of all, identity, and passport comes with identity. So you need to make some decisions there. If you don't already have an identity infrastructure that will help you support mobile devices, then that's something you need to put some time in. You don't want to rush and install Azure AD. And I know maybe the sales guys tell you it's very easy. You have set it up in 5 minutes and it works. No, you need to do some design and planning decisions around it that in most cases could take a little bit longer. So mobile device management, understand how that management works. It's different than on-prem management as what you may be used to from an SCCM environment. So SCCM uses WMI. MDM is a different way of managing, and we'll go into that a little deeper in a second. Enterprise data protection, already spoke about that. We still touch on it because it is important. It's one of the key things that many customers are asking. Work from anywhere is really VPN. So the capabilities we have developed around VPN have evolved quite a lot as well in Windows 10. And Windows Store for Business, I spoke about that. And update management, one of the big feedback components from the Windows EDP program I spoke about earlier. Enterprises want to be in control over the updates that go to those phones. So how have we done that in Windows 10 Mobile? Identity. So the first topic, identity. If you're not an identity expert, you probably have people in your organization that can help you with this, or it's something that you simply need to pick up. But with mobile devices also come mobile identities. It's something that in the future things might change a bit, especially around the Windows Server 2016 time frame. But at the moment, if you have mobile devices and you want to roll a corporate identity, you really need a cloud identity. And in this case, it's an Azure AD identity. So several models to choose from. Like I said, you don't simply want to spin off an Azure AD and run with it. No, you want to understand what the best model is for your organization. So the first one, which is the most simple one, is spin off an Azure AD and start enrolling devices in it. So that's one option. The other option that you often see is you have on-premise infrastructure and you want to integrate what you have on-prem with what you have in the cloud. Especially customers with SCCM infrastructures are very keen on this scenario. So one of the two flavors you have with hybrid scenario where you have on-prem and cloud is that you can do that with a password sync. So the password from AD is synced with the cloud, or you can do it in a federated way. So another decision you have to make. The first one, of course, is the simplest to implement and the fastest, but a lot of organizations want to use federated, and it depends also on what your requirements are. So it's something to think about a bit longer as what should we do? Let's do Azure AD and spin it off. So these are the things you need to think of. Microsoft Passport and Hello. Who is familiar with Passport and Hello? Not too many. So Microsoft Passport is the Microsoft implementation of what we have in FIDO. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the FIDO Alliance, but that's an industry consortium that has defined a standard, a worldwide standard, and Microsoft has also agreed to follow that. All the major players in the market are going to follow this. It's the Googles, the Samsungs, everyone is following the FIDO Alliance. This is to get rid of passwords. Passwords are bad. You know that all the data leakage articles that you've seen in all the newspapers, often it is related to pass the hash attacks or people that have guessed someone's password or have stolen the hash of someone. And what we really want to achieve with Passport, what the industry is trying to achieve with Passport, is get rid of that. So how do we do that? In several ways. So we make the device a factor in the authentication. So what we do is when we enroll someone in Passport, the device itself is required to log on for that user. So if I don't have the device of the user, I cannot log on to any of the resources that are needed. So that's one part of Passport. The other factor is something that you are, or something that you know, in the case that you don't have biometrics on the device, you can use a PIN. But if you have biometrics on the device, and most devices that are released for enterprises now come with biometrics, could be fingerprint, facial recognition, or iris scan. That's called Windows Hello. And that is basically the second factor of authentication. So I need to have both of those things. So if you use biometrics, you need the device, and you need the user. Otherwise, you cannot log in. So if you are there, if you have the device of the user and you have the user, then it very much becomes like a hostage situation where the user is forced to log on. So that's what Passport is trying to do to prevent, to get rid of passwords and all the bad things that are related to passwords. One question that is asked is, where is the private key? Is that going to a server, or are any of those biometrics characteristics stored on the server? Because if that is the case, you have a privacy issue in many countries. So that's not the case. There is no biometric characteristic leaving the device. There is even no biometric characteristic stored on the device, because we use an algorithm that from the biometric takes a mathematical formula and translates that in a key, and that is being stored in Passport, protected by TPM. So that's why I said you need a device that is protected by TPM. One thing to understand is often organizations that are embarking or already have virtual smart card, Passport can also simulate like if it is a virtual smart card. So if you, for example, have a VPN plugin that requires a certificate in a smart card or in a virtual smart card, then Passport could be used as well. The flow on how it works, so I'm a user, I have an account, and I want to enroll that in my IDP. The IDP is the identity provider. In our case, it's most likely an Azure AD, but it could also be an Active Directory when we are with Windows Server 2000, when we're working with Windows Server 2016, as we're going to support Passport there as well. Passport comes in two flavors with the current version of Windows 10. We have the Passport for Work, which is the enterprise container, and we have the Passport for Consumer. There are many banks, et cetera, that are also supporting this alliance of FIDO, and you'll see more and more parties jumping on this bandwagon. So the first thing is I need to create a trust with my IDP, so authentication and validation takes place, and I'll show that in a moment on one of the devices on how that works. So I need to prove that I am who I say that I am, and that can happen in several ways. So the user then can unlock Windows Identity Container, Passport, and with a PIN or Microsoft Hello, so with a biometric. So authentication token is provided to the device, and you can then log on to the applications. A few things to consider. You saw that the three models that I showed earlier. So if you're going to use an Azure AD only model, you could use, you only need basically an Azure AD subscription. So you need Azure AD to have Passport. You'll see that in a second. There is no other infrastructure needed, unless you want to implement Passport based on certificate-based authentication. So some organizations prefer to use certificates, and you can do that as well. Or you let the operating system generate the keys for you, or you use certificates. Of course, you need a PKI environment if you want to use certificates, and you need a management solution to enroll those certificates to devices. So there are some additional pieces of infrastructure required. In a hybrid scenario where you have Azure AD, Active Directory, and you need more infrastructure. So you need Azure AD Connect, which is the new AD Sync tool that we have to synchronize the directories, but also to synchronize the device registration, and that goes up and down. That's why Azure AD Connect is required, because with that implemented, you now have single sign-on. That's a big advantage of Passport, and I'll demo that in a second as well. You have single sign-on to cloud and on-prem resources. So it doesn't matter anymore if I connect to my organization from somewhere over the internet, or if I connect to my organizational resources within my organization. And then we have the on-prem only, so that will come with Windows Server 2016. That's why we need more components for Server 2016. So one thing that hasn't been spoken about a lot is roaming of settings and OS settings, so application settings and OS settings. That's also something that comes now out of the box with Windows 10, and of course it's all implemented in Azure. It is all protected in the cloud, so anything that roams in Azure AD is protected by RMS. It's free, so if you don't have RMS, don't worry. You get an RMS set up for free. You can only not do the actual RMS stuff. The only thing that is used from this subscription is the key. But that key is used to encrypt everything that's in the cloud. So data in transit, as well as data stored in REST, is being fully encrypted. So what is being synchronized is shown in this slide. So we have the OS settings, and we have the application settings. Depending on what scenario you implement, the OS settings will roam to that specific cloud service. What I mean by that is if you do a bring your own device scenario where the primary identity of the device is an MSA, then the OS settings of that device will roam to the public cloud and not the Azure, your cloud that you own. So you need to be aware of that. In a scenario where the device was enrolled with Azure Active Directory, so the primary identity is Azure AD, the settings of the OS will roam to the Azure location that you have. So it's important to understand, because this is also something that security people want to know about. Because these things happen automatically. There's nothing you have to configure really for it. So you need to be aware that these things happen. Yes, they are encrypted, but you still don't want your corporate data to be stored in a public cloud, even if it is encrypted. This is just a slide that I put in here for your reference. So if the primary account, so the red box is Active Directory, the triangle-like blue box is Azure AD, and the Microsoft sign is the Microsoft account, could be Outlook, etc. So the secondary account. So depending on how you enroll your device, AAD roaming will behave differently. The reason why I put an asterisk with the second row with Azure Active Directory, if you currently have a device where you allow a secondary account and as an MSA, so you have it enrolled in an Active Directory and you now allow a device with an MSA, or you have MSA allowed in the organization. And from the moment you trigger the AD sync, so with Azure AD sync, your settings and how they roam will start behaving differently as what you are using today. So that is something to be aware of. I already spoke about most of the other stuff on here. It was more as a... So some things that you need to be aware of is what to configure in the backend. So what I have is very simple. I have an Azure AD configured. I have an Intune tenant attached to it, and I have an Office 365 tenant attached to it. Few things you need to configure there to get devices enrolled, etc., and to have users in there syncing with the right settings. Okay, so in Azure AD, you need to enable a few things for users to enroll devices. I'll show that now. I'll talk about it later, but I'll already show it now. So you have an idea where to do that when I talk about it later. So this is the Azure AD I'm using, so the mobility demo. In here, what I need to configure is to allow users to enroll devices in my organization. This can be done for specific user groups, or you would just allow it for everyone. And that's under devices. Users may join devices to Azure AD. And that is required to get the primary identity of the device as an Azure AD identity. So the other thing that you, of course, need to do is to make sure that Intune is attached to this Azure AD, and that Intune is configured to allow MDM enrollment as part of this configuration. And to do that, you need to go to the application settings. For me, it is already configured. You need to go to your application, this is Intune, and you need to configure it. If you do this for the first time, you have a save button at the bottom. That's what you need to select. And from that moment on, all my devices that I enroll in Azure AD are also automatically enrolled in MDM. So the end user only has to do provide his credentials or her credentials one time. Another thing you need to do is to make sure that your licenses are assigned to that user, because quite often say, I cannot see Intune in here, or I don't see this user is not able to enroll in Intune. So there are two ways of doing this. So you can do that on the licenses, but as you can see, you only have your Intune and your Azure AD licenses here that you can assign to. So this is Azure AD Premium. You cannot see because it's falling off the screen, but that's what you need if you want to use multi-factor authentication, etc. A better way, if you're using Office 365, because you get a much, much better experience from a productivity point of view, is to go to the Office 365 portal, the admin portal, and if I here select my user that has been synced for my on-prem, so I have a hybrid identity scenario where I have an Active Directory on-prem and I have Azure AD in the cloud. And here I can also click Edit, and make sure that the right licenses are assigned to this user. So that's something to consider when you set this all up. And you see here I have all three of them, Office 365, Intune, and Azure. So I just wanted to quickly mention that because that's a very common mistake. People create a test account, for example, in a test lab, but they forget to assign the licenses, so things are not working. Mobile device management. Like I said earlier, mobile device management works slightly different in an MDM-like environment as it does in Config Manager on-prem WMI. So I quickly want to put everyone at the same level about how MDM management really works in the background. So let's see what happened. So first of all, the architecture. So the client architecture of a mobile device can be, so every Windows 10 device has an MDM client on it. So you don't need to install a separate agent on it. The MDM client, so a mobile device can be managed through an MDM solution. That's the third one from the left. So MDM or Microsoft Intune, but it could also be AirWatch or whatever your flavor of MDM is that you have in your organization. You can manage it through EAS. You can even do provisioning. I'll show that later as well. But MDM is what we're now talking about. That talks to a common device configurator. That's an interface that really sets CSPs, configuration service providers, on the device, which you can compare to group policies in Active Directory. But it's a different mechanism. So a configuration service provider is basically a setting that you can set, read, or write, just like group policy settings. What we use to communicate with devices is SyncML, and that's the file that describes how the CSP should be configured on the device. So for example, we have an MDM on your left. That MDM sends a SyncML file to a device. The MDM client picks up that SyncML file. The common device device configurator does the interpretation and the specific setting. In this case, I have the remote find CSP, will configure the setting accordingly. In this case, it will most likely be a read because you want to identify where that device is. So how does that look in Intune? For example, it's not my intent that you can read this, but this is where you configure policies in Intune. And the policy where I have written, where I've drawn a red box around is the minimum passport length. So this is 6. So what really happens in the background then is a SyncML file is written. And the three things that are important in this syncml file is, first of all, the device ID, so that the device knows this is for me. Orintune knows, send it to that device. Secondly, it is the CSP, or the OMA URI. So this is the location where the CSP is being configured. And thirdly is the value itself. So this is a very simple example, but you get an idea about this is the syncml sent to the device, and that's how the device configures these specific settings. So this is an overview of where you can configure those settings in Intune. On the Windows, you now have, and it now looks differently because you have Windows 10 policies, and this is where you configure the custom URIs. So let me go back to my test device, and I'll show you. So a lot of people that are participating in the early deployment program or the early adoption programs in Windows First Wave, they get these CSPs. They are configured in Windows, so Windows offers these CSPs, but you cannot yet configure them because they're not in the management solution. So if you want to configure those CSPs at an early stage, what you can do in Intune is to use a custom URI. So under policies, so Intune is loading. So what you will see is that under policies, there is a setting configuration policy. So this is where you set all your policies. You can click add. And this is where you can then see that list that I showed earlier. And under here, you have a setting custom configuration, Windows 10 and mobile or later. So I already made one here because I cannot remember those long settings from the top of my head, but here I have one of those policies. So if I click edit, just to give you an ID, so you don't need the Intune or config manager, whatever environment you have, to be updated to support those settings that I just released. So in this case, I gave it a name, Windows above allow action center notification. So I simply, in a locked device, I don't want Action Center to show any of the notifications that come in for privacy reasons. And here I have that OMA URI configured. So basically what is pointing to my CSP. And I think something is falling off my screen. There you go. Yeah, I've got some scaling issues here. Ah, there is. Yeah, thank you. So that's where the OMA URI setting is, and the value is in there as well. So that's where you can configure custom settings if you want to do it all manually and not through the GUI. So some valuable sources to use is, first of all, the custom URI settings for Windows 10 devices. This is where you can configure all the settings. This is an Intune blog that they recently released, and they said they're going to keep it up to date on how to set Windows 10 settings if they are not yet available in Intune. The second one is the one from Windows Engineering Group, that's MSDN, and this is where you can read everything on CSPs that are available, for which platform they are available, because on phone you have some other CSPs available as on desktop because you have cellular CSPs as well. Then for people that are in the Insiders program, if you're interested if new CSPs have been released in the product, there is an registry key setting. If you go in that registry key, you see all the CSPs that are available on that device. On a phone, that is not possible, but the same versions of the operating system should support the same CSPs. So next is deploying the device. So the first thing that you will do in an organization is to enroll a device. So in the life cycle of a device, you start enrolling the device. You can do different things there. So like I said, the MDM agent is already built in, so you don't need to worry about that. The identity is available, so you need to have set up Azure ID if you want to enroll it in Azure ID, and then you can choose to provision or to do an MDM enrollment to an Azure ID join. So I'll show both in a demo in a second. But first of all, the MDM enrollment, which automatically works from Azure AD, is new. What it does as well, it triggers a passport enrollment. So when I enroll my device in Azure AD, I have configured it now correctly. Passport is being triggered to be set. And the first time you enroll passport, you're asked to provide a PIN. When you've provided a PIN, you can later also configure the biometrics or do that through policy. And the other thing that then happens in the background, if I've configured it correctly like I just showed, is that the MDM enrollment will take place as well. Why is that so important? Because the user then doesn't have to do any additional configuration on that device, only during an UBI experience. So he unboxes the device, type in the right credentials. The other one is provisioning. So we can now, with the ICD tool, provision, create packages with all the configuration that we need to configure that device. So we could also configure the MDM enrollment or any of the CSPs that I spoke about through a provisioning package. That package you can put on the device. There are different ways of doing that. You can use NFC, you can use a USB cable, or you can simply use an SD card. Whatever your preference is. So that package is then installed on the device and the device is pre-configured with all those settings. So different options there depending on what your needs are. Some of the scenarios that have been given is, for example, in some factory type of environment, you're not allowed to have a camera on the phone or anything like that. So you could disable the camera with an NFC scanner on that device, and then when the employee goes out again, enable the camera again with an NFC scanner. That's just an example. Wouldn't know if it really would work well, because how would you know that that device that the employee is using is actually a corporate device? But anyway, it's a lot of different scenarios are possible with this this way of provisioning. So I'll show both. I'll first show the way that you most likely will see it happen in your organization, and that is through the phone itself. So the end user, and I have to show it with a GoPro camera because there is no USB connection. This is an out-of-box experience. The only thing that I've done is I've selected the language and the time zone. So that's the only two screens that I skipped. And then the first thing that the user will see is welcome screen. The user needs to sign a EULA because that's how it works. So the next thing that we need to configure is the time zone. I'm in Brisbane at the moment. The reason why why it was on Pacific time is because I have set it to USA. See if the date is correct, the time is correct. You click Next. Normally, this device will have a SIM card, so I don't have to do this. That will connect to the internet. Because I don't have a SIM card in this, I need to connect manually. I click Next. I say Express Setup. And this is where we already got quite a bit of feedback on. It was a feature that was implemented last moment, so we couldn't do a lot of GUI change. We couldn't make a lot of GUI changes to the device. But very small, under create one, and create one is really an MSA account that you would be creating. You see sign in with a work account. And that is really what you need to instruct the user to click on to make sure that they start using the Azure AD account they have, which is nothing else as the UPN that they use in your AD as well. So that's the email address most likely in your organization. So the user is instructed what's going to happen. The user is told that we're going to enroll this device in Azure AD or Office 365 if they have that, which is Azure AD as well. And this is where they need to provide the their username. Ignite user one at that is my username. I'm now redirected to my STS because I have a federated solution that I've implemented. So I have AD federated. So what I'm actually doing now is authenticate against my Active Directory. So I'll type in the password. Passport is not yet enrolled, so I still need to use my password. I'll click sign in. And what is happening now in the background is this device is being registered in Active Directory. In Azure Active Directory. So that takes a while. Some things need to happen in the background. And in Azure AD, I didn't show it earlier, but in Azure AD, you go into the user account, and then there is a tab called Devices. If you click Devices, then you will see all the devices that are enrolled by that specific user. So this should be one of the last times that I need to provide my password. I click OK. Now we need to cross our fingers that everything will work. It's enrolling a passport on my device now. So it's enrolling that passport container. So I need to create a PIN. Because I don't have a SIM card in this phone, I have it in my own phone, I now need to prove that I am who I am. So normally it would call this user if I use phone factor. In this case, I've configured it with phone factor, but normally you can use any other multi-factor authentication as well to prove that. So you didn't hear the lady's voice, but it was asking me to press the key, but you could also provide a key to the user that they have to type in before they can authenticate. So now I need to create a PIN for passport, and this PIN is used to unlock the TPM so that it can access the credentials. So I need to type in my super secret PIN. You're not allowed to do 111 or 123456. And that's it. So now the device is registered in Azure Active Directory. The device is also being enrolled in Intune. This is just telling me that I don't have a PIN. And let's see if it already enrolled in Intune, account, work access. And as you can see here at the bottom, you'll see mobility demo AID. That's my Intune tenant. It is enrolled in Intune as well. So everything happens in one go. How can I prove that I have passport enrolled on this device? If I go to Edge has full passport integration. And if I go to my Office 365 account, normally if you had an MSA, you would have to log in again. And mobile users don't like that. But if I now go to portal.office.com. If I had an on-prem resource, I could use it as well. But you see very quickly you saw the logon screen, but then Passport kicks in and it logs me on with my passport to my Office 365 environment, because that's also attached to my Azure AD using the Azure ID identity. But if I had on-prem resources, I could use that as well. As you can see, you're logged on now. So a very secure user experience. The other thing I'll quickly show, because I didn't show it yesterday, is this is a Hello device. So how easy it is to configure it manually, but you can also configure it with policy. So under here, you see sign-in options. Because this is this device supports Hello, I need to provide my PIN, because it wants to be 100% sure that I'm the one who's asking. So let me type my PIN. You can imagine that. So I need to hold my phone in front of my eyes. It's scanning my iris. And I click close. And I'm enrolled in Windows Hello. So just to prove that I now don't have to type in the PIN anymore. So I can. So I lock down the phone. I open it. If I use this, I can still use the PIN for Passport. But if I don't use it, and I'll just hold it in front of me, the device will unlock based on seeing my iris on the device. So this is the new devices that are coming out with all kind of biometrics that are enrolled. So if you would like to log on as me through this device, you need me because you need my eye, and you would need the device. All right. So the next thing. Is provisioning, a provisioning package. So I have a device here, and I'll show that first, because that's what I always forget, to prove that it actually was working. That's a device, this one doesn't have, let me do it. I'm unlocking it. Under here, I now have internet access. And I had it on the same page. You see, I have internet access. So I'm quickly going to configure a policy with ICD. A package. So this is the image and configuration designer. You can use it for other things as well. So when you install the ADK on this device, you have the image and configuration designer. So I can create a new provisioning package. I'll store it in, I'll call it Wi-Fi. And I'll store it somewhere locally so I can find it back in a second. Under ICD, I create the packages, a new folder, call it Wi-Fi. I click Next. I'll select a Windows 10 mobile device to create a package for. I don't need to import a package that I already have. I'm going to set up a complete new package. This takes a while because it is just loading all the CSP settings. So when you are seeing the screen in a second, you see all the settings that you can configure. But it is also loading all the information. For example, if you go into a setting, it will describe all the settings. And it's really getting that from the internet. So if the Wi-Fi is kind to me, it will show up in time. This is normal that it takes this long. You use this tool for other things as well, so you can use it to work on your unattended files, etc. So this is the new tool. Another thing about the ADK is what a lot of customers asked as well. Okay, if I have installed the ADK and I now have a new operating system because they were using TH1, they moved to TH2, can I then still use the older ADK? And the answer is the ADKs are in general okay to support later OSs. Well, this is taking a little bit too long, so I might use one of the settings that I created before. So under ICD packages, I've got one created here already. This is a package. Let's see. Oh, it's ready. So it loaded all the settings. So these are the runtime settings that I can configure. I'm going to configure a policy to disable the Wi-Fi. There is Wi-Fi. Allow Wi-Fi. No, do not configure. And I'm going to, I could now deploy it directly to the device, to a USB connected device, but I might want to use it for other devices as well. So instead, I'm going to export it to a provisioning package. I call the provisioning package Wi-Fi, it's the same name. I want to do it as the IT admin, and this is just a setting, nothing really attached to that. I could encrypt the provisioning package or sign the provisioning package. For the sake of the demo, I skip that. And it is stored in that location that I just created. And I click build, and it will build that package for me. Now if I go to the Wi-Fi settings, I have the package here. So what I will do now is I'll look for my phone here, but that's because that is the simplest way of doing it for me at the moment. But NFC or SD card would work as well. I see my phone there, so I'll drag and drop it on my phone. So now I'll need to find back my So if I now open my phone, it will ask me, I got this package, do you trust it? Yes or no? I click yes, edit. And where you can find it is under settings. Account, provisioning, and that's where you see the Wi-Fi setting. If I select it, I could also remove it as an end user, but you can, of course, control that and what that behavior will be. So I did a very simple example. If I now go to internet and I'll say refresh, you see that there is no internet connection. So that's another way of deploying packages deploying provisioning packages and getting a phone ready. I could also provide my MDM details in here so that I could enroll it in MDM. So two ways of getting your devices ready. So the second level is we have provisioned the device in my environment. Now I need to configure it. So configuration and security settings will kick in from the moment that the MDM enrollment has taken place. And because I did configure that in Azure AD, the device is automatically enrolled in MDM, and the settings, the security settings as well as configuration settings, will flow down to my device. So one thing that is important, if you're planning to use certificates, so certificates are fully supported on phones, it's fully MDM integrated or config manager, so in the a configuration console of those tools, or if you're using AirWatch or a Mobile Iron or whatever you want, you can create certificate profiles. So you first, of course, need to deploy a root certificate so that the device is trusting the certificates that come from your PKI, but after that you deploy the certificates profiles. So there are different reasons why you need certificates. Sometimes it's because of Wi-Fi settings that you want to configure, or Wi-Fi profiles that you want to enroll. Microsoft Edge might need them. Line of business applications might need them. Or S/MIME is in some organizations being used. But you can also use RMS. So just to give you a quick idea how certificate enrollment works, but there are whole presentations about this, so I can't go in every detail, but try to follow me, because it's quite a complex implementation if you see this for the first time. But what you need to remember is that the role within Windows Server that is used to enroll certificates for mobile devices is the NDES server. That is part of your PKI infrastructure. So that NDES server is placed in my internal infrastructure, and I need to publish that to my ADFS proxy, or your web server. So the first thing that we'll see is, we'll go back, these are the most common components that you normally have in an MDM-managed environment. But the only components of an environment like I'm now having in a hybrid scenario, where you manage with Config Manager, have Active Directory, and sync with Azure AD, the only components that are used for certificate enrollment are the Configuration Manager environment, the CA, of course, NDES, and the reverse proxy. So how does the flow go? And this is a very different implementation that Windows is using compared to other platforms. And it's very important because NDES has a few flaws that Windows has tried to solve and in-tune as well in the following way. So the first thing that happens is the root CA needs to be deployed to the device, because the device needs to trust your PKI environment. That's fairly simple. So that can be done. The root CA can be deployed. The second thing that needs to deploy to the device is the SCEP profile, or the certificate profile. And in the certificate profile is not only the location where the device can enroll or request the certificate, but it also has a challenge to ensure that this profile really came from your internal infrastructure. And this is where Windows differ from many of the other platforms. And this is also where the spoofing and man-in-the-middle attack really cannot happen, because the challenge is required to request that certificate with your NDES server. So SCEP was really developed a long time ago to support certificate enrollment on network devices, and it wasn't really developed for enrolling certificate on mobile devices. But it is today used for it by most implementations, so we use that as well. So the device gets the SCEP profile, and the device requests from the NDES server the certificate enrollment and uses the challenge to prove that that request is a valid request. So the NDES server validates that challenge with this certificate revocation point on the SCCM environment, and if that is successful, the NDES server will request the certificate enrollment to the device. The device will get the certificate, and the private key of that certificate is generated on the device and set as non-exportable. And that is important as well, because that means that the certificate can really only be used on that specific device. So you cannot get it off the device. That's on a SCEP hybrid environment, and with hybrid, I mean you have Intune and Config Manager. That's an environment that you will often see in many organizations. If you only have Intune, it was very similar. The only components used then is you don't have Config Manager, but you see that little pink box there. That is the Intune NDES connector, so that will act as the certificate revocation point that you normally have on a Config Manager server. So again, the CA is deployed to the device, the SCEP certificate profile is deployed with the challenge, the client requests a certificate from the NDES server, the NDES server is validating with the Intune NDES connector if that is a valid request. It will validate that with Intune. And then the certificate, if it is a valid challenge, is requested from the CA, and the CA will enroll the certificate through the NDES server to the device, and again, the certificate is created as non-exportable on the device. So it looks very complex, but there are very good ways how this is documented. It's not as complex, and you don't see this all happening in front of you. The creation of a certificate profile is very straightforward in an Intune environment. The new thing that comes to Windows 10 Mobile and Windows 10 is the capability to deploy PFX files. So for example, for S/MIME, if you want to create, or if you require a certificate that you need to unencrypt an email, and that certificate is created with a private key that is set as non-exportable on that device, you would only be able to unencrypt those emails on that specific device. So in that case, CAP wouldn't really suitable a suitable protocol or a suitable enrollment mechanism for certificates. So for those scenarios, we also have the capability to deploy PFX files. So the way that this works is you deploy the root certificate, of course, if you didn't already have done that. Intune will contract the certificate connector. Intune connector requests a certificate on behalf of the user. The certificate is created and it's encapsulated in a PFX file. The connector sends it up to the Intune service, and the PFX is delivered to the device. And it's not something where the end user has to go into the PFX and unpack it. No, it is installed automatically. Enterprise, so that's certificates, and I really wanted to show you that flow, and the reason I wanted to show you that flow is because those are the three most common scenarios that we see, and also to show you why all those components are required to prevent those man-in-the-middle attacks, and because when you start using certificates, it's most likely for a very secure scenario. Enterprise data protection is something that didn't really make it, but the experience is how you will see it is as follows. So enterprise data protection is really to ensure that users don't mistakenly copy and paste data to sources where they shouldn't copy and paste it to, or leak it to unintentionally. It's not made to completely prevent that, because there are many other ways to do it, you know, all the copying machines, etc. But what we do is, in the management console, we say these are corporate applications. These are corporate locations. So any data that comes from any of those locations should be considered as corporate data. And by doing that, that data is being encrypted on the device, and you can use, again, the RMS key to do that if you prefer that, because then you can also recover if you want to do that later from a central point. The applications that are configured as corporate, you can see that, have a little icon in the right-hand corner on them, so you know which applications are identified as corporate applications. So that's what you configure in the MDM. So some of the settings that you configure in the MDM are there. It also integrates with your VPN, so you can say, okay, these are corporate applications, and the data can only corporate data can flow over the VPN. So everything that comes over that VPN is also considered as corporate data. It didn't make it in this build, like I said, but it is going to be enlightened again in the Windows Insiders build that will be released very soon. Then another component that is very much of interest to many organizations is conditional access and health attestation. So I spoke about this yesterday, but the way that you access resources today, and well, maybe not today anymore, because Intune now has for iOS and Android already a conditional access solution implemented. But the way it works today for Windows devices, if you don't use Windows 10 with conditional access or health attestation, is you ask access to a resource, let's say Exchange Active Sync, and the Exchange Active Sync says, okay, log on, and you have access. So then you have corporate information on a device that you know nothing about. So what we really wanted to do is to make sure that that device, where that information is being read or being consumed in any way, is really trusted. So it's not bracket open, bracket closed, jailbroken, as we call it in iOS. So the things that will happen is that the device will request access to a resource, but before the device will get access to that resource, it needs to attest with the health attestation service in the cloud that it is healthy and complies with the policies that you have configured for conditional access. So, for example, you might say, well, these are not good examples for phone, firewall and anti-malware, but you might say it needs to have the latest anti-malware installed. But the other things that are being attested is that it did a secure boot with the bootloader that is signed and trusted by Microsoft, and it is loading the OS files that are signed and trusted by Microsoft. So if it doesn't comply with that, it will not get a healthy state from the health attestation service. The health attestation service is available today in the cloud for everyone to consume. There are no costs involved there. There will also be a health attestation service on-prem on Windows Server 2016 for organizations that want to do this on-prem or prefer to do this on-prem. So when you comply, you will get access to those resources. The other thing is VPN. So a big investment has been done in VPN. So you probably have some VPN plugins that you're using today. Most of the major vendors like Cisco and all the VPN vendors out there support Windows 10 mobile. So they have a universal app in the store, and you can automatically push that app to the device. So there's no need for the end user to do this. If you configure Passport to simulate a virtual smart card, then you could make everything nicely integrated. So different ways of VPN that are supported is per-app VPN. So you could say, okay, this application is trusted to go over this VPN, but this application is not. The other one is always on. So always on means, okay, if certain conditions are met, for example, I have Wi-Fi, then set up my VPN connection so I have access to internal resources. So that is in a nutshell from a configuration and security management. There is, of course, much more there, but I just wanted to highlight some of the things that a lot of organizations are really putting more attention to when they implement Windows 10 mobile solutions. App management. So the big thing here is the Windows Store for Business. So Mike Niehaus in one of the other rooms is now doing a session on Windows Store for Business. So if you want to know more details, go to or watch his session on Channel 9. Everything is recorded. I'll give you a quick demo on the Windows Store, and don't go in that level of deep detail. And you can configure the application level settings, so we'll talk about that as well. So first of all, the Windows Store. So from Windows 8.1, especially when we were running those early deployment programs, the first feedback we got, okay, great to have a store, but MSAs are not allowed in my organization, so the store is useless for me. Now we have Azure AD identities. So we can now use Azure AD identities to use the store. Even if my users don't have Azure AD identities, I as an administrator can go in the Windows Store for Business, download an application, and offline distribute it to all my users in my organization without the users having an Azure AD account. So it now offers much more capabilities as what you used to have in Windows 8.1. So how it works is you sign up for the Windows Store. You access the web portal, and I'll show you in a second how that looks like. You acquire the application, so it could be free applications or paid applications. So you can also bulk buy applications. You can give certain ISV access to when they release a new version of their application to automatically push it to your private store. So there are a lot of options there. And you manage the licenses, and you deploy and in whatever way you want it. So online or offline to your end users. So, like I said, online or offline, not going in too much detail here, so watch Michael's presentation, but online is really where end users see the store, and I'll show you that in a second. Offline is where you can take it offline, inject it in your image that you deploy, or distributed with your management solution that you have. So, There we go. So when I log into the business store, this is the screen that I get. So I can go shopping, and that's I can go and get different applications. So that's something that you normally would do if you go into store as well. But I can also manage it. So in my inventory, I will see all the applications that I currently have in my store. As you can see, I just uploaded a few. Under my new line of business application, I could install line of business application. Account information just showed me my account. So it is attached to my Azure AD subscription. Line of business publishers is where I said earlier you could put publishers in there. Management tools is where you can define. It's not working yet for Intune. I believe it is going to work in 1 or 2 weeks, but where you can integrate with your management solutions. So where, for example, when you use a company portal, that company portal will then show the applications that you've made available to your end users. The other thing is permissions. So we don't have many roles at the moment. I believe we only have 2 roles, but you could add additional people, and we have an admin role and a purchaser role. This will, of course, grow in the future. Also for large organizations that are global, they might want to have more roles based on geographic location, because as you know, the store also has applications that are available in certain geographic locations. So that's what I do. So I install, purchase, or I'll put the applications in my private store. Under inventory, what I just showed, you will see the applications. And if you then go to the device, because often what is... let me quickly remove that package. So I have Wi-Fi again. If I now go to the store, this is where you find it. You see a tab called Ignite Demo Store. That was the private store that I just had. And these are the applications that I published in there. So these are the applications that I make available. Because I have an MSA account on this device as well, I see the other store applications as well, but if you don't allow that, you wouldn't see that. You would only see these applications. So a few last slides before we stop. So we all know the Windows as a service. A lot of questions that are being asked, okay, will that also apply to phone? And the answer is yes. So we also have will have different branches for different phones. The different branches here is the engineering build, so that's the build that engineering is running on, so that's where they are validated. If they comply with certain criteria, they can move to the next ring. If they then are being trusted with that ring, they move on, so it's your Windows Insiders branch, and then it becomes the current branch. That's when we release them. Features are being introduced in the current branch in rollups. So you see, for example, the TH2 release that we released last week is a current branch. But in Microsoft Insider's preview, you see features landing based on the build that you install. And internal in your organization, you can create rings as well. So you can say current branch for business I have a branch where they do the initial testing and then they move on to the next branch as well. So new in Windows 10 Mobile is an enterprise SKU. So you don't have to install anything new on that device. Any device that is being released with Windows 10 Mobile will have an enterprise SKU in there as well. At least it has the bits in it. The main thing that is relevant for enterprises to understand about what that SKU will enable for you is to postpone operating system updates, or in other words, you can now do update management on that phone. So that was one of the features that was being asked for by many enterprise customers. There are more things that are in Lighted, so install more than 20 self-signed applications, etc. But this is very important. And it works identical as it does on desktop. So the way that you manage updates, if you manage that desktop in a mobile way. So when that device needs to be unenrolled, so you can just wipe the data from it. That's something that has been spoken about many times. Not a lot of changes here from a Windows 10 perspective. It's just something to complete the life cycle of the device. So we can do a full wipe, or we do a reset. And some references that might be helpful. So you have the Windows 10 block. You've probably seen that, the Windows 10 MDM documentation that I showed earlier. There is a mobility guide block, and I still need to update that guide, but it contains a 200-page guide that I wrote on how to set this all up for, as well, an SCCM Intune environment or an Intune-only environment, with everything on that, with Office 365 and all the stuff that I just showed you, but I still need to update it for Windows 10 Mobile, because Windows 10 Mobile only was released last week, so I need to get some time to actually update that. So that brings me to the end of this deck. It's a lot of information. I hope you understand that I had to combine a lot together to give you an understanding about what is required to deploy Windows 10 Mobile. Often a lot of these topics that I went over in a single slide, presenters spent an entire session about it to get that across. It's not to say that it is difficult or complex to implement, but you just need to get your head around it, and it's not, like I said, complex, but it is just a different way of managing devices. Mobile devices are managed in a different way because they have different characteristics. They float around all over the world, maybe, and you need to still be able to manage them. So they require different infrastructure and different support and management mechanisms. So thank you very much for your attention. Please complete the review of the session, and they added some slides to my deck, and apparently there is a big party tonight, so I'll hope to see you over there as well. Thank you very much. I'll stay here for a while.